Hello, and welcome to this installment of the Jones and Bartlett Learning podcast series. My name is Bill Kimball. We're speaking today with the three co-authors of the new book, Health Behavior Theory for Public Health, Principles, Foundations, and Applications, which just published in December. Dr. DiClemente is the Charles Howard Candler Professor of Public Health in the Emory University Rollins School of Public Health and Associate Director at Emory's Center for AIDS Research. Dr. DiClemente holds joint faculty positions in the Department of Pediatrics, as well as the Division of Infectious Diseases, Epidemiology, and Immunology at Emory's School of Medicine. Dr. Richard Crosby is the DDI Endowed Professor and Chair of Health Behavior at the University of Kentucky. He has published approximately 300 journal articles or book chapters, most of which involve empirical findings from theory-based studies of health behaviors. He is also the author or editor of 5 other textbooks. Dr. Laura Salazar is on the faculty at Georgia State University Institute of Public Health, where she focuses her research efforts on improving the sexual health of adolescents and adults. Well, thank you everyone for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
So let me start with our first question. Can you tell us a bit about what inspired you to write health behavior theory?
Who wants to go first?
Rick, why don't you start?
Happy to. Well, all of us are teachers. We teach grad students. And we like to begin teaching undergrad students. And we all struggle with the process of how to best get students to easily understand and acquire skill in the field of behavioral theory. So finding the right book is always the challenge. And we never really found one that we all like to use. So we decided one day, let's write our own. And a mere 5 years later, we have our product. This was a lot of hard work, but it was a labor of love.
What?
Yeah, I agree. I taught the same class, Health Behavior Theory, for years while I was at Emory University. And the one book that was readily available and widely distributed, it's a great book. It's very informative, and it does a good job, I think, of describing the theories. But if you've never taught this course, let me tell you. Teaching theory can be really dry, so what was difficult for me to use that particular book, which shall be nameless, it was inconsistent. There was different authors did each chapter. It wasn't practical. It was really difficult to engage the students with that book and try to get them to think of theory, how they would apply it in their practice, how to design interventions using theory. It just was difficult. So, at the time, Rick and I were both at Emory along with Ralph, and I was with him when he said, let's write a new book.
Mm-hmm. And it worked.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, I think it really worked. I think you're absolutely right. There are other books on the market, but this book, because it's written by us, has the continuity, has the consistency, and it's laden with examples. We were very big on putting examples into the book, examples often from our own work, so we can illustrate points that need to be brought home. And we think the students will find it eminently readable. It's engaging. It's at times we try to be witty. Let's see how successful we are. And we think the faculty will love it as well. We know how important it is to find a resource that faculty can use. And we've made some auxiliary material to really amplify some key points, and faculty will find very useful.
Yeah, and Ralph is really the master of examples. So in chapter 6, he talked about Goldilocks at one point, and the Goldilocks story really illustrates very nicely a key construct.
Yeah. Well, the Goldilocks principle was really important in stage theory. And I think you're right. There are very few theory books that actually have a fairy tale as a template to get across a point that that theories or theories need to be shaped to individuals and tailored to meet individual needs.
Yeah, people need to be able to relate to theory. How it really can be used in our everyday lives, in particular changing our health behavior, how to understand health behaviors better, how to What activities can we do to change health behavior? Because health behavior is not easy to change.
Well, it's very complex. Human behavior is perhaps the most complex thing to understand and certainly to change. But I think the book does a great job of capturing some of the key elements. And we're certainly critical of theory as well. This is not a rah-rah book or a flat, let's just present the theory and the facts. We certainly weigh in and provide a nice critique of the theory, what it's been useful at, where it's not been so useful, and where it perhaps needs to go, be more useful.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, too, in addition to that, one of the important things is each chapter, we always go back to the context. So health behavior doesn't happen in the vacuum. So whether the theory is an individual level theory or a higher level theory, regardless, we always try to bring it back in and know that we have to consider the context in which the behavior takes place, even if that theory doesn't.
Now, all of us write about theory in other formats. We publish journal articles, for example. So we're not just looking at this as a textbook. We're also scholars of theory. So we're, as Ralph mentioned, and as Laura just suggested, we're bringing to bear in the textbook our expertise that we use in our everyday careers.
Well, there are a couple of unique aspects of this book as well. We all got together, and certainly we've read a lot of books on theory. And we said, you know, what are some of the gaps that we could really fill? And we filled a couple of things that are critical. One, we have a stellar chapter on diffusion dissemination. We have another chapter on evaluation. We have another chapter on
measurement.
And of course, these are all related. They're all theory-driven. Theory-driven measurement. Theory-driven evaluation. All these things, all these elements link when you're doing health promotion. So theory is not in isolation, but theory provides a broad context within which you work to produce an intervention or to study health behavior.
I think at the end of the day, it gives students just the bigger picture of what they're trying to accomplish as public health researchers.
I would just add to what Laura and Ralph were saying, that key is accessibility. Learning is difficult for everyone, and our job was to make that learning easy. So we try to make all of the theories, and we have a large number in this book, very accessible to the students, so they can become well-versed in one semester, which is a short amount of time.
I think the study template that we have, and again, that's the virtue of us writing the book together, and we actually did write it together.
Literally,
on many occasions, we sat down and we took writing retreats, and we would spend days writing together, so that each chapter has been culled over by the three of us sitting around the computer. So we've actually merged our writing styles, and we have a consistent template from chapter to chapter to chapter, so students can follow it very, very easily. And if they're looking for a particular aspect or point or fact, they know it's very easy to find.
I'll never forget how good it felt to finish the last chapter. And I thought, well, we're done. But both Laura and Ralph said, no, not done yet. We need to field test this in the classroom with real students taking the course for a grade. I'm like, okay, that's another year, but they're right. And so this was also tested with, I'd say, over 50 or 60 students.
At least.
At two different universities with two different instructors also.
So again, unlike many other books, which are certainly put together well by scholars in the field, this book has been student tested and student approved. We've gotten a lot of feedback from the students, some things they liked, and we punctuated those and amplified them. Some things they thought we could have done better, and we've modified the book to make those aspects a little more enjoyable and a little more intelligible and usable. So I don't know many books that have student tested at two different universities, but this book has been.
Great. I really appreciate that response, and it's a great segue into my next question for you, which is, what makes your book unique? How does it differ from other health behavior textbooks on the market?
So I'm a high school teacher by training way back when. I didn't enter academia until I was in my late 30s. And as a high school teacher, you learn that students respond best to things that are simple, straightforward, and clear. So that's kind of a guide that I have whenever I sit down to write. And Ralph and Laura have the same strategy. So the three of us together came up with a number of different methods that we use in this textbook to reinforce learning and to keep things clear and concise. You want to give some examples?
Well, we have some cartoons that illustrate some key points.
Original cartoons.
Indeed. The picture is worth a thousand words.
Mm-hmm.
We have applied examples that we incorporated at the end of every chapter that take the students through the application of the theory to a specific public health issue, guides them in that process to see how other people have used it and how it's done.
And we have contemporary quotes, not just by individuals who might associate with theory, but from lots of people. We have a quote from Jay-Z that we've used. We have a quote by the quote from Northern Rolling Stones.
Meryl Streep,
et cetera, that young people might relate to, as opposed to just theoreticians.
And
we have pull-out quotes.
Pull-out quotes are important. That's what I was going to say, because the fact is, we all know that students don't always read the chapter like they should. Sometimes they only skim the chapter. So we have the key concepts set off in the margins, in pull quotes. And we hope that actually pulls the reader into doing the rest of the reading. But we do everything we can to keep our readers entertained and informed without working too hard.
You know, Rick's experience was completely different from mine. So I came into being an academic a little later in life, and I didn't have all those years' experience as a high school teacher. So for me, when I was a brand new professor teaching health behavior theory for the first time, and some of those theories I hadn't learned in my program of study. So kind of wrestling with a book that was difficult as an instructor to use, and first I had to teach myself some of the concepts and then try to teach them to new graduate students, it was very difficult. So I wanted to make sure with this textbook, and I think we did a good job, and I think it is different from some of the other ones on the market, that with our objectives right up front, the pull-out quotes, the take-home messages, the applied examples, the ancillaries that come with the book, I feel like it really is pedagogical and makes it very easy for new instructors to adopt and run these in the classroom, whether they've taught the course before and used other books, or they're brand new starting out and it's their first time.
Yeah, I think most of the books are edited books on theory, and that makes perfect sense because you've got someone who's an expert in a theory to write about it. However, that often leads to sort of a fragmented approach where there's no consistency or continuity from theory to theory, nor in the template or the way it's presented, or as Laura was mentioning, or the quality of the writing in terms of the pedagogy. We really spent a lot of time thinking about how can we make these theories easily understandable. How can we make them so that young people would assimilate these theories and actually apply them to public health problems? I think we've done a pretty good job of doing that.
Yeah, in so many ways, and we've really tried to integrate theories into our authored textbook, which you won't find in edited textbooks. So, for example, the extended parallel process model comes from the field of health communication. But it has very specific and important meaning for our work
in changing health behavior.
Great. And finally, can you tell us what pedagogy you've included in the text to help make teaching and learning easier for both the instructor and the student?
Well, I think one of our key features that we can talk about is the collection of ancillary materials. So we've created questions that it's very easy for a professor to put on the screen as discussion starters. I do this now. I'm teaching from this book, and that's the way I start off every class. I put the questions that correspond to last week's lecture up on the screen, and I get the students to start answering, and they do fine until they all of a sudden might miss one, which is my opportunity then to reteach. Questions can be used as a diagnostic tool to find out where the professor needs to go back and work a little harder to be sure the concept was well taught and well learned. So we really feel those materials are helpful to professors. I think in a lot of ways, the PowerPoints are beautiful.
So we have a PowerPoint for each chapter. Yes.
Yes,
and
test banks.
And a test bank. But like the book itself, since we actually wrote the book, the PowerPoints have a similar template. As they move from chapter to chapter to chapter, there's that continuity that you don't find in other books.
In addition, I think the way we try to structure some of the chapters, we noticed that it was difficult. One week you were talking about health belief model, for example. The next week you were talking about theory of reason to action, theory of plan behavior. The week after that, it was another value expectancy theory. So I think as far as learning and teaching, we took a different approach, and we synthesized some of those theories in one chapter because they had similar constructs and worked in similar ways when we applied them. So I think that's another strength, and helps the students synthesize and understand the theories more as a in ways that are grouped together as opposed to one per week. And then they don't see how it all fits together. So I think that works really well for not only the students, but also for the instructors to keep it more consistent and allow them to understand some of these basic constructs.
Laura makes an excellent point. I've never seen a theory book that actually groups theory together. So as we're writing about one theory to another theory, we can cross-reference other theories that are in that group or that cluster. And it really brings home the message to young people about some of these constructs. Theory is like learning a foreign language. And we've really tried to simplify it. We've actually gone to great lengths to make learning that language easier to handle and to easier to apply.
Exactly. So they can see the similarities, but also the differences, but it's all grouped together. And so the instructor doesn't have to struggle with that.
This is clearly the Rosetta Stone of theory books.
There you go.
Yeah. It's real easy to grasp the concepts. You're going to keep coming up. We're going to keep reiterating them from chapter to chapter. We're going to keep cross-referencing some of the constructs that in one chapter are similar to constructs in another theory, so the young people can make those connections. Normally, that wouldn't happen in an edited book.
The three of us come from three different schools of public health in the United States, and we're well familiar with the new credentialing exam for people receiving the MPH degree. And so our book caters to that in many ways, because it's not just about theory. Theory doesn't exist in a vacuum. So we have a chapter, for example, on dissemination. And as Ralph mentioned, a chapter on evaluation. We have chapters that open the book, the first two chapters, that place health behavior into the broader context of public health. So in many ways, I'd like to end by talking about the idea that Laura alluded to earlier of putting theory into context. And certainly, we want our students to be well-rounded and ready for these exams someday. Maybe if I could just say one last thing, I'd like to address this to the assistant professors who might be listening to this podcast. It's always important to have good teaching evaluations. And I remember being a first-year assistant professor and being very anxious about what my teaching evaluation score would be. And it turned out that I did okay, except I got dinged on my choice of textbooks. Students hated the textbooks that I chose. And I learned right then and there as a first-year assistant professor that one of the most important decisions you make as a teacher of graduate students, or undergrads for that matter, is the adoption decision. So, again, there are lots of books out there now to pick from. And we really all feel that this is one that will serve you well in the classroom.
I think Rick summarized it very well.
Great. Well, thank you all again for taking time to speak with us today.
Well, it's a real pleasure. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Well, that concludes this episode of the Jones and Bartlett Learning Podcast series. We've been speaking with Drs. DiClemente, Crosby, and Salazar about their textbook, Health Behavior Theory for Public Health, Principles, Foundations, and Applications. To learn more about this textbook or to request a complimentary review copy, visit go.jblearning.com/healthbehavior. That's go.jblearning.com/healthbehavior. Jones and Bartlett Learning, a division of Ascend Learning, is a world-leading provider of instructional, assessment, and learning performance management solutions for secondary, post-secondary, and professional markets. To learn more about Jones and Bartlett Learning, visit the corporate website at www.jblearning.com.